Hey there, guys and gals, all you hip cats, cool kittens, you diesel-powered disciples of cool, my friends and foes, welcome to another episode of Tales from the Flipside, the podcast. I am your host, the artist sometimes known as Big Daddy Cool, the diesel punk impossibilist, John Pica. You can call me Johnny. And on tonight's episode, we are going to be talking about Star Wars and a recent fan theory that I have really fallen in love with, and I think you'll really relate to it. We're also going to be talking about the differences between Nashville, Tennessee, and New York City.
New York City!
Yeah, New York City. I just recently visited there, and, you know, it had been maybe 10 years since I had been to New York. And in 10 years, a lot of things have changed regarding the differences between New York and Nashville. For example, 10 years ago, we didn't have really great, I mean, great ethnic food in Nashville. If you wanted to go eat really great ethnic food, you know, Italian, Chinese, Polish, German, there were pockets. There was a good German restaurant in Nashville, and there were some decent Italian restaurants. But for the most part, if you wanted good, like, kosher food, forget about it. You had to go to New York for good pizza, for good kosher food, for good Chinese. 10 years ago in Nashville, we just didn't have it. Today, totally different story. I'm going to be honest with you. There are 43,000 restaurants in New York City. There's about 4,000 in Nashville. But those 4,000 restaurants in Nashville are as good as anything I had in New York. As a matter of fact, there's not one thing. No, I take that back. There is one thing I had. I had a Reuben sandwich that was like the holy grail of Reubens at Junior's Diner. But other than that Reuben sandwich, I never once had anything that was legit better than what we have in Nashville, Tennessee. Not even the pizza. As a matter of fact, I had a slice of pizza at Coney Island that was downright horrible. If you live in Nashville and you go to Joey's Pizza or Coco's Italian Market, you're eating better pizza than what I had in New York City. That's the truth. And, you know, the one thing that New York did have that Nashville doesn't have, and now I understand people who complain about Nashville's lack of dim sum. We ate in Chinatown, and Nashville doesn't have dim sum like they do in Chinatown. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, and apparently I didn't really understand it either until I experienced it for myself. Dim sum is Chinese for small bites. They're appetizers, they're dumplings, they're, you know, they're rice, sticky rice bowls, dessert sweet stuffed appetizers. But here's how they serve them. They come along with a big cart full of these dim sum containers. They're steamed. They're in this cart steaming, and they just serve them. What do you want? And you can have chicken and pork and shrimp and beef and sticky rice and fried dumplings, whatever you want. And they set out the tray, and there's four, five, six small bites in each thing. We don't have anything like that in Nashville. And I will say that that dim sum in New York was really, really good. And I will admit that there was nothing in Nashville that compares to that. But everything else, food-wise, that I had in New York, I can find an equally good equivalent in Nashville. So the food, what do we call it? The food disparity really is no longer a thing. The other thing that Nashville or that New York had or that I noticed in New York was that there were no overweight people. Everyone was fit, trim, and in shape. And the reason is because you got to walk everywhere. You know, even if you take the subway or the bus, it's only getting you so far, and you're going to walk the rest of the way. You know, in Nashville, if you got to walk 5 blocks, you're calling an Uber, which is really funny. So let's, you know, the other thing, you know, obviously New York has Broadway. And Nashville has great theater, but, you know, obviously not Broadway. That's what I just said, Pam Simmons. Pam Simmons is watching us live on Facebook, and she said, because they walk. That's right. They walk everywhere. People are fit, man. They are in shape. Here in Nashville, you see a lot of fat people. But that's okay. I'm nothing wrong with that. Body positivity. Hallelujah. But I thought it would be interesting to talk about the things that Nashville has that New York doesn't have. New York doesn't have Uber and Lyft. Oh, they exist, but not like here. Because, see, in New York, it costs so much money to get a permit to operate as an Uber or a Lyft driver that it's really restrictive. People just don't do it. Here in Nashville, Uber and Lyft are everywhere. The other thing you don't see in New York that you see in Nashville is entrepreneurial transportation. I saw a couple of rickshaws and, of course, the hansom cabs in Central Park. But here downtown Nashville, we got bicycle rickshaws, we got the golf carts, we got Bird scooters, we got the Lime bikes, and people trying to make a buck doing entrepreneurial transportation kind of things. And that's pretty awesome. You don't see that in New York because the cab lobby has such a tight grip on transportation that it's restrictive for anyone to do anything entrepreneurial. The other thing Nashville has that New York doesn't have, and I didn't realize how much I missed this until I was out of the South. Now, understand, I grew up in Northern Ohio, in Akron, Ohio, and we didn't have grits in Ohio either. I mean, there were places you could go, but for the most part, people were like, you remember in My Cousin Vinny? Vinny was like, what's a grit? That's what people were like when I was growing up. What's a grit? Only reason I knew what grits were was because my mom was from Berea, Kentucky. So, you know, we ate grits growing up. But the rest of the people in northeastern Ohio, they were like, grits? What are grits? Well, New York City, there ain't a grit to be found. And they don't have the kind of breakfast places that we have. Now, there are places to get breakfast. Some great diners. And that's one thing New York has that Nashville doesn't. You know, you have a neighborhood diner on just about every corner. But I'm talking about, you know, the pancake pantries. You know, Nashville Biscuit House. I'm talking about, you know, those places where breakfast is 5,000 calories. That's why we have so many fat people here. They eat 5,000 calorie breakfasts, and then they take Uber and Lyft everywhere they go instead of walking the 5 blocks, you know, to where they're going. See, in New York, if you're walking 10 blocks, that's kind of equivalent to 1 block in Nashville. But we've got amazing breakfast food. The best breakfast is on the planet in Nashville, particularly biscuits, grits, pancakes. Oh, you know what else they don't have in New York that we have in Nashville? Speaking of breakfast, country ham. Country ham, people. Country ham. That's all I'm going to say. The other thing that Nashville has that you never saw in New York, never once saw one, was the pedal taverns. Now, if you aren't familiar, a pedal tavern is this long, how do I describe it? It's like this long bar on wheels, and the people sit on seats along the bar, and they keep the bar moving. It's mobile, it's on wheels, and the people sitting there drinking keep it moving by pedaling. A few years ago, one popped up, then another. They're everywhere now. Pedal taverns are everywhere in Nashville. And it's really a brilliant idea if you think about it. How much energy, how much alcohol are you burning off pedaling this tavern to keep it moving? So you got to consume three times, four times as much to get the same buzz. And so they're selling more and more alcohol, making money hand over fist. It's remarkable. You never saw that in New York. Now, what you do have in New York that we don't have in Nashville yet is the street food vendors. Now, we have hot dog vendors down on Broadway, 2nd Avenue, 3rd Avenue. But we don't have anyone doing, you know, the kind of stuff they do in New York, like the halal guys. That's about to change. Right now, it's only hot dogs. That's the only thing they will allow is hot dogs and bratwurst. There's a lobby trying to get that changed so that we'll start to see, you know, falafel and, you know, chicken skewers and stuff like that. That will be awesome if we get that. But here's the biggest difference between Nashville and New York. You ready? You know what Nashville has that we don't, that you don't have in New York? The music. Now, I'm not saying there's not music to be heard in New York. They're great, great musicians. Oh, and that's right. Pam Simmons on Facebook also mentioned we have food trucks, which you don't see in New York either. We have awesome food trucks. But the biggest difference is the music. Although you can go to places to hear music in New York, you have to know that that's where you're going. And most of it's, you know, in a theater or in a club. Not like in Nashville. In Nashville downtown, there are 500 venues that offer live music from 10 a.m. till 2 a.m. 500. There's music everywhere you go, and you can't walk down the street without bumping into somebody who's got a guitar slung over their back. Musicians are everywhere, and it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool, and it's a stark difference. When I came back home to Nashville, and I'm walking down the streets of Nashville, it stood out even more because I'd just been in New York where you don't hear music coming out of every place you pass. It's amazing. Live music in Nashville is alive and well, and it's a huge, huge part of our city. So for those of you who live in Nashville and you know, kind of on the fence about this town, it's an awesome, awesome place. I recommend you go visit other cities and see what they're missing so that you can appreciate what you got. So anyway, it's time to talk about our main topic. And we're going to talk about Star Wars here on the podcast tonight. You guys know, if you've been listening for any period of time, yes, I'm a diesel punk. I love the 30s, 40s, 50s, the art, style, music, decor, everything about the diesel era, science fiction from the era. And I'm not going to go into big detail, but I believe Star Wars, especially the prequel trilogy, is a great example of Art Deco diesel punk. But I am a Star Wars freakosaurus. When I was 7 years old, I saw Darth Vader step through that door on the Rebel ship. And, you know, I saw that in the theater opening night. And I said, I want to do that. And I didn't know what that was per se, but it really shaped my future. And I became an actor, a performer, entertainer because of the feelings I had for Star Wars. And I've done other episodes on Star Wars apologetics. Basically, my support of Jar Jar Binks, my defense of the prequels. I'm not going to get into that tonight, but you can go back and listen to it. The latest episode is Star Wars Fans Are the Worst. So go find that on iTunes, and you can listen to that. But I wanted to talk about this theory that a friend of mine presented to me about the Star Wars movies and about the Skywalker legacy. By applying the principle of save what you love, not destroy what you hate. This is a theme that was presented in the latest Star Wars film, the latest trilogy film, The Last Jedi. The character Rose Tico says to Finn, when he says, why did you save me? She says, because that's how we're going to win. Not by destroying what we hate, but by saving what we love. So a lot of people have given a lot of criticism to The Last Jedi. A lot of people have taken issue with that character, Rose Tico. And if you were one of the people who hated The Last Jedi with all your heart, you may not care to hear this. It might change your mind. Either way, here we go. This is the principle: save what you love, not destroy what you hate. Darth Vader, dark side, but redeemable. He's conflicted, and he's driven by both the desire to save what he loves and to destroy what he hates. Often, this line blurs for him, and over time, jealousy corrupts his desire to save what he loves, and this is shown very well in the original films. Even better in the animated series Clone Wars and Rebels. This conflict would arise again and again in the finale of the original trilogy, but with a different outcome. By the end of the prequels, Anakin's desire to destroy what he hates, i.e. the Jedi Council and even Obi-Wan, overrides his desire to save what he loves most, his wife, Padme. And he turns to the dark side and he becomes Darth Vader. More tragic is that some of what he wants to destroy at this point is what he once loved. He tries to choke out Padme. He wants to destroy Obi-Wan. He hates him, but at one point he loved Obi-Wan. They were brothers. However, at the end of Return of the Jedi, Anakin, now Vader, flips the script once more, choosing to sacrifice himself to save what he loves, his son Luke, and is redeemed. But wait, there's more. Luke Skywalker, the light side of the Force, is driven almost exclusively by his desire to save what he loves. His acts are almost always an effort to save people he cares about. And this is shown again and again in the films and even in The Last Jedi. His one real weakness isn't a desire to destroy what he hates, but self-doubt and his raw emotions. In the original trilogy, the OT, Luke destroys the Death Star to save others, confronts Vader to save others, and confronts the Emperor to save Vader. Luke only falters along his journey because of self-doubt. When Palpatine tries to tempt him to destroy in hatred, Luke denies him, and he chooses again to save what he loves, his father, Anakin Skywalker, Darth Vader, inspiring his father's final redemption. However, in The Last Jedi, Luke seems to have lost hope and made choices contrary to this pattern, because he sees Kylo as irredeemable and his self-doubts rise again. But when it matters most, Luke sacrifices himself to save what he loves, redeeming himself and again inspiring a galaxy. But wait, there's more. Kylo Ren, Ben Solo, dark side, irredeemable. At this point, he is driven almost exclusively by the desire to destroy what he hates and sees any other act as weakness. This too is shown again and again in the films. He wants to let it all burn. Even when Kylo has a moment of weakness in his chance to kill Leia, his mother, he does nothing. His non-action allows another to strike what could have been the killing blow. And when confronted with the person he hates the most, Luke Skywalker, all other considerations are swept aside in his attempts to destroy what he hates. Kylo cannot be saved because he has a monolithic motivation and only acts on the destroy what you hate half and never acts to save what he loves. Therefore, he is irredeemable. So, from a certain point of view, the theme of save what you love, not destroy what you hate, has been a part of the Skywalker saga from the very start. And it plays out in all three characters' arcs of the trilogies. Pretty cool, isn't it? Now, that did not originate with me. That is courtesy of Scott Eos Weldon, who turned me on to that theory, but I am adopting that as my own personal theory, as part of my own personal Star Wars apologetics. The entire basis of all three trilogies is save what you love, not destroy what you hate. It's an important lesson. And if we translate it to our real lives, our personal lives, and put it into practical application, it has real profound meaning, especially when you consider it in terms of the political debate. One side of the fence wants to save what they love. The other side wants to destroy what they hate. And as we see through the lessons taught in Star Wars, that's not how you win. You don't win by destroying what you hate. You win by saving what you love. So next time you want to post a mean, hateful, vile tweet or post on Facebook tearing down a local or national politician, next time you want to show your hatred for something or someone, just remember that by trying to destroy what you hate, you don't win. You only win by saving what you love. That's my thoughts on the subject. That's my thoughts about Star Wars tonight. I'd love to hear your comments, your opinions. You can send me an email at johnpica@johnpica.com. You can also find my schedule and see where I'm going to be performing next. Pick up a copy of my book, Tales from the Flip Side. By the way, Volume 2 is almost 15,000 words away from being done. So hopefully that will be coming sooner than later, and you guys are going to be shocked by the title, if the publisher lets me use it. So pick that up, johnpica.com, J-O-H-N-P-Y-K-A, johnpica.com. And if you like the show, do us a favor and drop a tip in our digital tip jar, $1 or $2. Make a pledge to do that every month at patreon.com, patreon.com/bigdaddycoolshows, or you can just do a search for Tales from the Flip Side, and you'll find us. We would really appreciate that. $1 or $2 a month goes a long, long way to keeping this show going. Last but not least, if you like the show, make sure you tell someone. Go online and post a review. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, on Stitcher. Tell 200 or 300 of your closest friends and family to come join the fun. And guys, until the next time, we'll catch you on the flip side.